Our final speaker today is going to be Denise Lindstrom, speaking for Brenda Seals. And Ms. Lindstrom is Native American Cancer Research and Prevention of Obesity Coordinator, a member of the Arikara tribe from the three affiliated tribes of Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara at Fort Berthold Reservation in North Dakota. Although she lives in Denver, Colorado, and has done so for some while, she has extensive experience in community work and social services, over 3 decades worth. And finally, she is also a grandmother. We have a jitterbug champion and somebody who is also a grandmother of 6. Denise?
Thank you. I'll try to be brief here, and I apologize for Brenda not being here, but she had another speaking engagement. So we'll start off with, of course, acknowledging those that have participated in this and prepared this. Okay, when we talk about the background, in the late 1960s and 70s, Indian tribes began seeing gaming as income. In 1988, the Indian Gaming Regulation Act affirmed the right of tribes to have gaming. There are 225 American Indian and Alaskan Native tribes operating 423 gaming facilities. In the darker orange area here, you see that these are the states with the most federally recognized tribes. In the yellow area is where there are existing tribal gaming. And finally, the tan color that represents tribal presence with some type of gaming, example is bingo halls. Okay, gaming. In general, casinos on tribal lands conform to tribal, not state, laws. Each tribal government has a unique relationship to their casino management, including deciding on how funds are used and setting policies indoor smoking. Some tribes are more or less successful at leveraging funds and applying public health interventions. In 2006, the National Indian Gaming Association reported that 24.5 million Americans visited American Indian and Alaskan gaming facilities, with 25.7 billion in gross revenue. There were over 670,000 jobs that were created from this, with 8.6 billion in federal taxes and 2.4 billion in state taxes and 100 million in local taxes that were paid. Gaming benefits. Not all tribes benefit from gaming funds. Those who do may support, to some degree, education, cultural activities, and income, police, fire, and EMT, health facilities, and or insurance. Gaming today. Many tribes are dependent on gaming and don't want to rock the boat. Casinos are organized politically. Casino management may be seen as independent of tribal regulations. Because of the sacred nature of tobacco, many tribes have reservations about control policies. Okay. National Indian Gaming Association. These are the website where you can get this information. It was organized in 1985 as a nonprofit. It works with 184 Indian nations plus. Purpose is to advance the lives of Indian peoples economically, socially, and politically. Serves as a clearinghouse in educational, legislative, and public policy resources. Examples of state organizations. This will give you an example of some that you can look into further and find out more information, which includes California, Oklahoma, Arizona, New Mexico, and Washington. Smoking bans. New York City's imposition of no smoking in bars and restaurants expanded to casinos such as Atlantic City, with mixed reviews on effectiveness, cost, and employee benefits. Many locations have found loopholes. States like Alaska have efforts underway to repeal current bans. Tobacco control in Indian country. The CDC funds one national tribal tobacco prevention network, now at an intertribal council of Michigan. Reducing secondhand smoke is a priority, but most often initiated at the family household level. Few tribal groups have considered smoking bans, especially as that would apply to gaming. Smoking bans in Indian country outside of California. This will give you, again, some more information. All of this can be downloaded from the website here or from our website, which is NateAmericanCancer.org. The one outside of California says smoking bans are low priority for American Indian and Alaskan Native casinos. States like Connecticut have attempted to impose prohibitions on tribal areas with mixed success. Even when council approves ban, tribal chairmen may veto. For instance, in Navajo country, they did have a smoking ban put into place, and the tribal chairman revoked that. Tribal politics. Tribal rules and regulations are unique. Knowing one tribe is only knowing one tribe. That means that there are so many different tribes, and we all have our own customs and traditions and beliefs. So if you're only knowing one tribe, such as the Arikara tribe, we do not compare to the Navajo tribe. The multitude of issues that tribes face often makes public health ventures low on the priority list. Tribal approval can be a long and difficult process. Lack of consensus about such bans, especially among influential elders. Tribal resolutions. Begins with drafting a resolution and getting on the agenda for a council meeting. Takes networking and persuasion to gamer support. Often can take many months before your agenda item is actually discussed. If approved, may lack enforcement strategies. Some success stories we have here is Muckleshoot Indian Casino voluntarily created a smoke-free casino. Yet successes may be really partial with non-smoking designated areas. I'd like to make note that I come from a reservation that we have one tribal casino. The air ventilation in this particular casino is not as well as some of the casinos I've seen here in California, San Diego. When you walk into our casino onto the gaming floor, there is an overwhelming smell of smoke, and it is very difficult to breathe. As to if you walk into a more ventilated, more expensive casino, you will not have that problem. Limits to success. Most efforts are mirrored in the state tribe debates over sovereignty, and many states have used this excuse to delay implementation in non-tribal casinos. Discussion. Despite the urgent need to make strides in banning secondhand smoke, American Indian efforts complicated by ongoing legal efforts. American Indian and Alaskan Native efforts are small compared to other similar tobacco campaigns. Some tribes and groups are exchanging gaming practices, but may be one floor at a time. In conclusion, more support for tobacco control is needed for American Indian and Alaska Native groups, especially the National Tribal Tobacco Prevention Network. Successes at a few tribal groups are encouraging, but given unique nature of the tribal governance, may be difficult to diffuse these successes. To reduce cancer, heart disease, and other tobacco-related programs, more efforts at the policy levels need to better understand tribal processes to make bans effective. Thank you for your time. Again, if you have any questions, please direct them to Brenda Sills. Her email, I'll give you that as well, is gbdssills@earthlink.net. Or again, our website is natamcancer.org. I appreciate your time, and I hope you have a wonderful day. Get you out of here a little early. Thank you.
It does conclude all the speakers for today. Are there anybody with questions, actually, I guess we would say, for any of the speakers yet? Well, there is one after this. The session is being recorded, so the speakers are going to come up to the mic and answer for you.
You know, that's a great question. I think our advisory committee just brought that up at its last meeting. And we do reviews, periodic reviews of each of the objectives. The National Center for Health Statistics, is Richard leads the team there, and every month we have focus area progress reviews, and the lead agencies present to the Assistant Secretary for Health. We completed a mid-course review, which is about that thick, that has an update or the progress on the objectives, and at the end of the decade, we'll have a final review. But you asked a very good question. We haven't done an analysis of why some of our objectives have been achieved and others haven't. We know at the mid-course review, I think we were about 60% of the objectives were moving in the right direction or achieved. A really small proportion actually are ever achieved. But that's something that the advisory committee has suggested that we need to do. Why are we successful with some objectives and not with others? And besides, you know, program and policy, some of that has to do with our targets. Healthy People has, especially Healthy People 2010, has some really, really ambitious targets that we would never achieve. So if we get kind of hung up in wanting to say we've achieved, you know, 100% of the objectives, you know, our targets would be really easy, not difficult at all. But that's a really good question. It's a point that's come up a lot recently. So if you have any ideas on how we can study that, we'd like to know.
Anything else?
You will be able to access that county on the community health status indicators, and you will be able to get a lot of the global overall data. So you'll be able to get the census data. You'll be able to get the things that are complete count. Some of the data in here now come from the BRFSS. The BRFSS has produced estimates for virtually every county, but in some of them, what you'll see if you go into a county like that is going to be suppressed data, too small. And you could very well see that for some of the vital statistics where you have to have 20 events. So there's no magic around the small number solution. One of the things we did for the community health status indicators is to aggregate data. So all the BRFSS data, 7 years of data, the vital statistics are either 3, 5, or 10. So with 10 years of data, you then essentially have a 5,000 population base, and you can get a lot more data. So we've tried to solve it by aggregating data, but in some cases you're going to have to go a long time before you can produce a trend. But we do have it for each county, and it's a major expansion. Yeah.
Going once, going twice. All right, dismissed early from school. Nice. Thank you very much. You should just have a single file and then you could have learned. Although you both had nice backgrounds on your slides, so. Yeah, Right. Because actually, I would like to know.
Thank you. Very good to meet you too. That was nice to be in the right hand. You know, you hear things that are, you know, This is what I don't get, because, I mean, the casinos are in Connecticut, they're not in Massachusetts, but everybody, I mean, tons of people from Massachusetts go down to have, like, Mohegan Sun, and I forget what the other one is, and we, you know, I don't know how, if you know how we are, everybody complains about everything, and so I just think that, like, I would have heard people say, like, oh, can you believe they still allow smoke there? When I come back, I have to, like, you know, wash my clothes like we used to have to do when we go to bars and be smoking. And I haven't heard anybody talk about that. And we were just talking about casinos in one of my classes a couple weeks ago, because we were talking about cost-benefit analysis and policies and whether or not we should allow gambling in Massachusetts. And, again, people were talking about going to Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun, and, like, the smoking thing didn't come up at all. Mm-hmm. So I'll have to investigate further. That was very interesting.
Well, and I think Native American, I think they're disproportionately affected by it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It says so here too in this report. It talks about how there's actually higher, like the highest smoking rates are amongst,
right,
I think,
right.
Asian Americans and
people like the Vikings.
Asian Americans and Native American Indians. But anyway, so yeah, interesting.
There's a lot of work to do.
Yes. Indeed. All right. On to the next one. So, Matthew, what are you up to these days?
Still at the CDC.
In the same position?
I
don't even remember what
the position. I'm the chief of that branch now.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And what's the branch?
Behavioral Interventions and Research in the SCD Convention.
Okay.
That's a gig. We do a little bit more structural healthcare system work now, I would say, in conjunction with our colleagues at the Health Systems Research and Evaluation Program. But I had a lot of confidence on the program to evaluate, and now they're doing some LP blogs, so we share more of that kind of work. But, I didn't show you any fine stuff because it was clear you were going to finish. When the discussion is like, at no point in like waving a 5-minute thank you when it's clear you're going to finish inside 5 minutes on it. So.
Nice
to meet you, kid, right? Yeah, I skipped your kids too, didn't I? I got
everybody
else with
it. Oh.
I wasn't impressed by that.
Skipped your what?
We had to put one.
Mary Kay
had
two.
Was a kid,
did
what? I
have six children.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Oh my God,
there
you
don't
have six children.
But ages 2 to 21, as I recall.
Yeah. Actually, 3. My son's birthday was yesterday. So I've gotten a lot of grief for all of my children, not including him, because he doesn't know, but
right.
All of my children are like, you started him for a
our age. Okay. Now, my mother-in-law had 7 kids, but I guess it's kind of similar to me, too. The oldest one was 19, and the last one was 4.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's something that she would recognize.
Yeah.
Well, you definitely
my wife's grandma had 13 pregnancies in 18 years on a 12-year-old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we just stood up. It wasn't like we just had this grand plan. It just happened. I think once you have 2, you said you have 2, right?
That's right.
Once you have 2, any more that you have after that, who even notices? I mean, we have this long counter, and when we're getting ready to have dinner, my husband lays all the plates in the diner. Dinner at the group home.
Shorter on cook, yeah. Are they all at home?
My oldest is in college, so she's
21 year old. Yeah.
Great. It's nice to meet both of you. Enjoy the rest.
Yeah, I'll see you in a few years, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's right. That's the next round. Yeah.
Good to see you again. Thanks.
Yeah,
That's all right. It's even better. I don't have to read off my computer.
Yeah,
all right. So, thanks for uploading as well. You're the only one who has.
I couldn't remember that. And I thought I was late. And
yeah,
I
know. See? If you want an hour, you can have an hour.
No. How did you get to moderate?
You know, I'm not sure. whatever. I'm active in CHPPD.
Okay.
And I guess I kind of know some of the program organizers. They know me, so.
Oh, cool. Well, that's good. It was nice. It's the first time ever that really I'm like, yeah, you did need this. And I'm like, wow, okay.
Well, yeah, and that's really hard. It's trying to get people organized. So.
So who at NIOSH do you know?
Well, my girlfriend works there now. Yeah, these are probably the new generation.
Okay.
Dishes.
Oh, okay.
I know two groups. I forget their acronyms, but they go by acronyms, right?
The Sage, right?
Yeah, the DFHs and just the occupational. Health folks that go out on site.
The environmental, the
industrial hygienists. Yeah, but they have a different acronym or something. Like the department. Anyway.
Yeah,
so I guess maybe some old people. Tim Bushnell is maybe one of the older, like more senior people there. Could have been there
Kevin
10
Dunn.
Years ago. Kevin Gunn.
Dunn.
I think I do.
No, Kevin.
Was he married to. Stacey Kramer?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. I know Kevin. I know Kevin well.
Say hi to Kevin.
I will say hi.
Yeah.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, so Kevin, Christy's no longer there. I work at the Taft building, so there was a little connection. With
Taft, which is Columbia Parkway.
Okay.
Yeah, because they're all over on Ridge.
Right. They're all the IHs. They're more the going out to the field. And
What were you?
I was more in the department. It's a long department.
What was your acronym?
In communication. I was more in the communications and education. God, I don't even know what else. Fog.
What did you do?
What did I do? Well, no. While I was there, I was actually working like on a young worker health and safety project on a national restaurant study, and then doing some of the bilingual things. Mm-hmm. So working there, like on the education.
Cool.
Yeah.
So and now you're in Osorito?
Health Med.
Fresno, wow. Fresno. I just was there a couple months ago for the first time I've ever been there before.
Oh, really? What'd you think?
Through California. That's nice. We came down from Contra Costa.
Okay.
And I don't remember what state route was to go through there, but it was nice. It didn't stay long.
It's good. Yeah, no, after the Cincinnati, I moved to LA, but my family is up north in Modesto.
Okay.
So I'm like, I wanted to move closer and stuff, so. Fresno.
Hey, close to it. Beautiful landscape. And
yeah, no, it's nice. I mean, it's like an hour. It's just like everything else. When it's really close to an hour and probably a half away from Yosemite, ask me how many times I've gone.
Have you gone?
Well, since I moved to Fresno, zero.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been, I mean, but when
many tourists.
Yeah.
Huh.
So where'd you get your PhD?
Alabama, Birmingham.
Oh.
We had our dinner, whatever our
reunion, social hours.
And it's like, I realize how different it is in a lot of the other schools, especially like the Northeast, you know, kind of Ivy League schools. We actually did I did at the International Health, and our International Health component. Hi there.
Hi,
Maria.
Hi, Maria.
Joe. Likewise. Our international health component was done in rural Alabama because they they had hookworm and all these parasitic diseases and, you know, no water sanitation, just like you would have in a developing country. So we did our, you know, we drove like a couple hours to rural Alabama.
We have a lot of rural areas, I think, in the U.S. Yeah.
Health services research.
Oh.
Something I fell into. We're working, we're doing a lot of work out here in California, actually. Maybe that's why I put that as my qualification. We've been working with the endowment, helping the endowment to do things related to Mali. At the endowment?
Yeah. Prior to all
yeah.
that.
Okay. And it's amazing, like, the number of projects that are funded. I can't believe, like, half the sessions I went to, they said, you know, they have the logo up or they're funded something.
The weirdest foundation in California, one. Two, they have a lot of, like, they had a rural funders club, and rural projects throughout. Most of the projects funded were in California, however, it funded the overarching umbrella for funding rural.
Really?
Just kidding.
Yeah. We're looking at the effects of the citizenship documentation requirements right now.
That's by county right now, county by county.
Well, it rolled out in July 2006. And yeah, it's been very slow. So it's very tough to study, to say the least. I'm going to look through it and see if we've got some other presentations here.